Dr. Roy Casagrande joins the Plutopia podcast this time. In a wide-ranging discussion, Roy evaluates U.S. presidents from Eisenhower to Trump, the challenges facing democratic institutions, tariffs, the media, and Vladimir Putin's impact on international politics.
Since the collapse of the Soviet Union and the collapse of the Eastern Bloc, there isn't that kind of polarizing effect. There's nothing to sort of latch on to. The world isn't black and white anymore. And I see people struggling so hard to make it that way, right? Like, Putin's a good guy. Well, he invaded Ukraine. That's not good. He was forced to do it. Nobody held a gun to his head and said, if you don't invade Ukraine, we're gonna blow your brains out. You know what I mean? Like, there's this weird thing that we have as a species where we want to have a good guy and we want to have a bad guy. And the reality is that most of the world leaders are somewhere in between.
Welcome everybody to the latest episode of the Plutopia News Network podcast. I'm John Lepkoski, and I'm here with my co-host and partner, Scoop Sweeney. And our guest today is Dr. Roy Casagrande, who's currently an expert with the United Arab Emirates University in Dubai, teaching political science and history. And also, he holds lectures at the Museum of the Future, where his Lessons from the Past series focuses on uncovering erased histories and connecting them to current systems of governance. He's an American professor of political science and history. And he's also known for his work on Middle East history, U.S. foreign policy, and his very popular YouTube channel that explores these topics. So welcome, Roy.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's great. How are things there in Dubai?
It's been hot.
I bet.
There's a lot of that going around.
You know, it feels like it gets hotter and hotter every summer.
Well, climate change.
Yeah. Oh, no, it's a hoax.
Well, I was going to say it would be a lot worse if it wasn't a hoax.
Pretty much everything is a hoax these days. Yeah. I don't think anything that, you know, who looks at is if it's in his favor, it's not a hoax. Otherwise, it's all hoax.
Right. Yeah. Well, there was that question that was happening that journalists kept asking him. I think it was in 2016. If you lose the election, will you accept the results? And he said that I will only accept the results if I win. Okay.
Well, that you know, I guess that makes sense. in some way.
Yeah.
Well, before we talk more about that dreaded person, I'm wondering what, you know, I saw this about these lessons of the past that you're giving lectures on, and I wonder what you've been focusing on recently in lessons from the past.
Yeah, so when we first set it up, it felt like we just picked a bunch of random topics. But as it's been unfolding, I've realized the question for this year was, what does good leadership look like? And so I've brought in some examples of good leadership. There's, you know, there's been some other stuff that isn't necessarily directly related to leadership, but that's definitely been the theme this year. And then next year, our theme is going to be, what are the things that are needed to create innovation? So
what does good leadership look like?
Yeah, I have a bias. And my bias, I tend to really like these moments of mercy that pop up very rarely in the human experience, where you'll have a leader who basically derails from the system and says, that's not the path I'm going to take. I'm not talking about him this year in this lecture series, but Salahuddin is the classic example of that, where, you know, a traditional leader would have expressed enormous violent cruelty in multiple circumstances, and instead he just kept insisting on a path of mercy. And I think some people find that frustrating because, you know, it took him longer to create a victory, but because it took longer to create the victory lasted. And so I think those are the kind of moments that really fascinate me, especially when a leader sets aside their own personal gain and is looking at long-term gains for their community. Queen Elizabeth I was looking 200 years out. You know, we don't have politicians in the United States that look past 2 years out. And so that, it's unimaginable to me to have this type of leadership where a person's looking decades, maybe even centuries out.
Well, I was going to ask about the United States leadership right now. Obviously, we don't have that kind of leadership right now. We probably have the worst case leadership, really. And I just kind of wonder, like, how would you characterize the leadership of the United States now? Not just talking about Trump, but that whole like movement that he represents.
Yeah, that's something that I've been struggling with for a while now. One of the interesting things that the United States has undergone is I feel like there's two things that happened simultaneously. One was a backlash against the 60s that, you know, Nixon represents. And then, of course, Reagan took it to a whole new level. And the other thing is that the 60s also created this sort of democratization event. So on the one hand, we have civil rights, women's rights, and then, you know, going into the 70s and 80s and 90s, LGBTQ rights kick in. And so there's this liberation movement. It's powerful. It makes major changes in our society. We change the way we elect the president in 1976, and we bring in the primaries in a real way, because, you know, there had been some states that had presidential primaries, but they didn't really matter. In 1976, that becomes the method we pick the candidate for the two parties. And so that's one track, this democratization event. And then on the other end, there is this movement away that a portion of the population decides to go down, which has led us to this current leadership. And one of the fascinating things to me in all of this is what I perceive to be a pretty steady decline in the quality of presidents. So, you know, Carter, we didn't really know who he was until he was running for president. He's not a true outsider. He definitely was very steeped in Georgia politics, but he was on a national level, definitely an outsider. Reagan, a terrible actor, terrible politician, no real experience. Bush, what was his experience? He was CIA director before he became VP. Like, he has no real experience. You know, Clinton was a governor of Arkansas. Like, who cares? That's not a qualification to be president. George Bush Jr. couldn't string together a coherent sentence. And he was, you know, governor of Texas for all of 6 years. So there was this very serious decline in not just quality of leadership, but the type of experience required to become politician, to become the president, seemed to have vanished. There was no more like Truman had worked his way up the system. LBJ had worked his way up the system. There was this process that you had to go through. We made exceptions, of course, for people like Eisenhower. But for the most part, there was, you really had to work the system to get there. And since this democratization, we keep electing these outsiders, and they keep turning into one awful president after the other. And then, you know, Biden was the most experienced president we've elected. He had more experience than all the other presidents since Carter combined. But he was so old, and the poor guy was out of it. And so you're like, the one guy that you wanted it to work, just, it was, he should have been elected 10, 15, 20 years earlier.
Well, if you had to rate the presidents in our lifetimes, say, starting with Eisenhower and down to Donald Trump and maybe Vlad the Impaler on the other end, how would you rate them?
So, you know, Vlad had a lot of personality. There's no doubt about it. Great warrior, he had janissary level training. Like, the guy understood the Ottoman Empire inside and out. So when he inflicted cruelty, he did it with class. You know, like, He earned Dracula and Vlad the Impaler as titles. They didn't come easily. I would love to see that quality of a person in the White House.
A really classy evil dude, huh?
Yeah, I mean, backstabbing. Nothing seemed to put him down. He always seemed to recover from one disaster after the other. Okay,
So
so
we've had mediocre evil people instead of
we've
really
had
good evil
mediocre evil
people.
people. Yeah, we really need to step up our game here.
Yeah,
So,
well, Vlad's opponents always seem to stick around, though.
that was nice. That's nice. So this is a tough one for me because I always go, on the one hand, I really liked X's policies here, but then I hate what they did there. So I'll give you an example. Eisenhower, his domestic policies were fine. He builds the interstate system. I loved his tax rate, but his foreign policy was just awful. And in many ways is what set up a lot of the chaos that we're experiencing right now. So, you almost have to sit there and kind of break it down. Are we talking domestic, like LBJ, domestic policies? How can you be mad at the Voting Rights Act and the Civil Rights Act, but then Vietnam? So, if I did domestic policies and left foreign policy out of it, then I think LBJ, Eisenhower are going to be at the top of the list for sure. Nixon, Reagan, Bush Jr., and Trump are at the bottom of the list. They were catastrophes. Poor Ford, he didn't even want to be president. The poor bastard is suddenly president, and he's just trying to keep the thing from sinking. Carter could never find his bearings. He tried to do too much. He was too idealistic. He was ruthless, but he wasn't practical. He was a fantastic ex-president, maybe our best ever ex-president, but as a
He had
president,
some
he
great
was.
sweaters.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I remember
Yeah.
those. So Obama and Biden definitely both were, like, since Carter, probably our two best presidents in terms of like just being able to function. I think one of the reasons why Obama did as well as he did was he had Biden as VP to give him the experience that he was l missing. But at the end of the day, again, I get stuck that the foreign policy for the United States is always just evil. It's just terrible. And they keep making these stupid mistakes that are just so obvious. You're like, how are you this dumb? And then they unfold and you're like, oh, there, we just wasted 20 years in Afghanistan. And so it's easier for me to do it when I just ignore the foreign policy stuff. But then, okay, so if you went through and looked at, as much as I dislike Eisenhower, is if you go th for foreign policy purposes, if you go through and look at the number of conflicts he starts, it's actually relatively low. Carter was fantastic at not starting conflicts. So, then it gets into the complexity of, yeah, but if Eisenhower hadn't overthrown the Iranian government and the Guatemalan government, if he didn't invade Lebanon in 58 and threaten to nuke Iraq, you know what I mean? Like, there's all these little pieces that make the analysis complicated.
You didn't mention
Maybe
Kennedy.
more Kennedy. What?
You didn't mention Kennedy.
Or Clinton.
Yeah.
Well,
Okay,
you mentioned Clinton a little bit.
I despise Clinton at so many levels. I feel like he was the guy who would always pick the practical, expedient decision for himself and then sell us out in the process. AIDPA was a catastrophe. Repealing Glass-Steagall, his policies in Iraq were disastrous.
Oop. We lost Roy for a minute there. There he comes back.
There's back. Whoa, who did we piss off?
Oh,
I want to say it was 5 days ago. Somebody cut the Red Sea internet cables. Somebody who had the c capability of doing that did this, and ha it has seriously injured the internet capacity of the entire Arabian Peninsula.
Yeah, there's been a lot of that going on, and a lot of the blame going to Russian oil tankers who just accidentally drag their anchors across these undersea cables.
Yeah, that's interesting. But what would be their motivation? That's what I don't understand. Like,
Us, but being a big pain in the ass to the communications that between the countries that don't like Putin.
well, yeah, but I
And
don't think
just
that's
Norway
motivated.
and
Just creating chaos, huh?
Yeah,
And
you
I
know, like
think.
UAE, it goes out of its way to express the fact that it's neutral. The UAE is a member of BRICS. Russia is obviously a member of BRICS since it's the R. So, you know, Saudi Arabia doesn't have a hostile relationship with Russia. I don't know why the Russians would do it. It makes me think that somebody else did it. But you know, who knows? It'll probably be decades before we find the truth out, because even if the truth does come up, we'll be lied to. So
We could always
I
blame
can
it
always
on
blame
Elon
it on
Musk, who used to be the richest man in the world.
yourself.
I just discovered today he's not the richest man in the world anymore.
Do you know who it is?
Larry Ellison.
No kidding.
Yeah, that's what I heard today.
They're
I
both
don't know who's counting
built.
the dollars, but
Yeah, Ellison is no great hero himself. He has done some interesting and vicious things in the tech fields.
yeah, I don't think you become a billionaire by being a kind person.
I think it's true. Yeah. Well, so the question I was going to ask a minute ago is, how's the rest of the world seeing the U.S. now? I mean, clearly we don't look as good as we did, and there's a real instability here that's kind of rippling through the world. How are people taking that?
Yeah, so I think there's a lot of, you know, like expectations met. This isn't as unfortunately, I don't think this is as big a surprise as I think Americans think it is. I lived in Germany for the last part of the Reagan administration and the first half of the George Bush senior administration. And you know, if when people would ask me where I was from, if I said United States, it was pretty frequent that I would get, "Oh, you're from the dumbest country on earth." And this is the late 80s. So we'd already really done a fantastic job of conveying to the world that we didn't know anything. And of course, Reagan was seen as a complete buffoon in the rest of the world. He was seen as this sort of bumbling idiot. Bush wasn't. Bush was seen as competent. I think most people saw Clinton as competent. I just think he was evil. And then, of course, George Bush Jr. was this bumbling idiot buffoon, couldn't string together a coherent sentence. And so I think all Trump has done is he sort of reinforced the belief that m many in the rest of the world had already come to, which was that Americans are dumb, and as a result, they will make horrible decisions in the voting booth. But you know, the United States has become the test case for why you don't want to have an uneducated voting population. You know, New Zealand and Sweden and Iceland have figured out how to do electoral republics. Don't get me wrong, Sweden has a government that I'm not very happy with right now. But at least the full-fledged catastrophe level, the stuff that we do, they're not experiencing. And so I think there's this sense of the United States is not reliable. We can't count on them for anything. They're going to make one bad, foolish decision after the other. So how do we function in a world with where the United States is just this chaos-generating machine?
Yeah, to Trump's credit, he has made Bush and Reagan seem less dumb.
Okay, I buy that. I still think that Bush was a worse 8 years, maybe just because of the death toll that he inflicted on the world. But yeah. Although some of those Bush quotes were amazing, like, "You see, our enemy are clever, and so are we. They're constantly thinking of new ways to harm America, and so are we."
Well, the thing about Donald Trump is that he's not hot to declare war on other countries. He wants to declare war on cities in the US, but not other countries.
Exactly. So I'm shocked that I'm saying this, but I really, really appreciate his cowardice. Like, I want him to stay the chicken coward that he is. Please, I'm begging him. Don't grow a spinal cord.
Trump always chickens out.
Yeah, taco.
Yeah. Well, so I can't imagine. I mean, I know there have been some really terrible presidents throughout history, really, but have we ever had one that was as out and out crooked as this guy seems to be?
I mean, Chester Alan Arthur probably was as crooked. I mean, the image that I have is people walking up to the White House carrying bags of money, literally, like that, like they're not even concealing the fact that they're bringing bribes to the White House. I think a lot of the 19th century presidents were just corrupt, openly corrupt. Even into the early 20th century, we started to clean up our act after the 20s, I think, in terms of presentation anyway. You know what I mean? Like, it's obvious that Nixon was dirty, and so I'm not saying corruption went away. It's just there's a little bit of a cleanup. But yeah, Trump broke all of that. He is so blatantly and obviously dirty and corrupt that it's shocking, right? Like, there's this, whoa, at least pretend. Why aren't you pretending? And it, I think that's the part that surprises me. I would have, if you had asked me in 2016, like, what are we up against? I would have thought incompetence, but it would have never occurred to me that he was just going to flaunt the corruption.
Well, have you gone out and done your Bitcoins through any of his operations, or did you buy a Bible or some shoes? And
Yeah.
the merch is just astounding, and they're making money hand over fist from
Yeah.
people who should know better, but obviously don't.
It's incredible because, I think Trump was basically bankrupt, and so the presidency is saving him. He has to be one of the
In a
first
big
people
way.
to lose $1 billion, and I his brand was basically, I'm going to open a golf course that can't stay open, so the Russians are going to have to come in here and launder their money through it, and then that's how I'll make my living. And now all of a sudden he's doing great. So it's wonderful. It's you're facing prison, you're facing bankruptcy. Run for president. It's your ticket out.
Well, do you think he is going to chicken out on Poland? The whole incursion of Russian drones into Poland puts, NATO responded, and all Trump did was a Truth Social post, it's on now or something like that. It's like that's not very much of a commitment to, NATO.
It's definitely not a commitment to NATO, and he's never made it clear that he is committed, right? In his first term, when he met with NATO members, they kept asking him, "How do you feel about Article 5? How do you feel about Article 5?" And he refused to say that he would stand for it. Article 5 is, if one NATO member is ever attacked, all the other NATO members are automatically at war. The fact that he doesn't make that clear is one of the reasons why he's become such an unreliable ally, right? It's one of the reasons why Germany and Japan are remilitarizing, and they're gonna put themselves back into a position where they can manage their own defense. So it's and potentially offense too. Japan has two aircraft carriers now, and aircraft carriers are strictly an offensive weapon. So. it's neat to see them bring back offensive capabilities. This with this Pullen thing, yeah, based on his track record, I think he'll chicken out. The problem is I don't think the rest of NATO will. So if Russia continues to escalate, this could conceivably trigger something that I don't think anybody is anticipating. And then the question will be, will the United States do what the United States loves to do, break the treaty, or will the United States follow through? And you know, it's so rare.
Yeah, it's interesting that the Dutch followed through. They used American-made fighters to go in and down the some of the drones. And Trump has never thought of the Dutch as having anything other than some windmills. And you know how he
windmills. Tulips. They got tulips.
Tulips. Tulips and windmills. If you've ever been in the Netherlands, you will see fields with tulips growing in them.
Well, I thought that I had heard earlier today that the Russians are saying that this drone thing was an accident.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that they didn't mean to do it.
19 accidents. I don't know.
Yeah, in World War II, we accidentally bombed Sweden 7 times. And each time we told Sweden we thought we were bombing Germany, we made a mistake. We're so sorry.
Oh, man, we need better navigators for sure.
Yeah, it wasn't an accident. Sweden was providing Germany with steel. So we were trying to disrupt that.
Well, the question I was going to ask a while ago is about Trump's embrace of the tech bros, you know, the big tech companies. Several of those people showed up at the White House and were, you know, bending a knee to him the other day, in a big way, bending a knee. And he has this big crypto scam going, and he seems to be excited about AI. And I think that in general, the members of his base, the MAGA people, really don't like any of that stuff. So is this going to make trouble for him?
So it seems to me nothing he does really makes trouble for him. I know some people are hopeful that the Jeffrey Epstein scandal will somehow do it. I don't know. Maybe I'm just becoming a cynic, but I don't see it happening. I was blown away by how quickly the tech bros lined up behind Trump. You know, even Bezos ordered the Washington Post to tone it down. And what I think surprised me was, some of them had put up a little bit of resistance in the first term and then clearly backed Biden in the 2020 election and then completely capitulated in 2024. So they must have understood, like I saw the writing on the wall that Trump was going to get reelected. I was making my life decisions based on the fact that Trump was going to get reelected. So I get that they came to believe that. What I guess what shocked me was how far they bent over to appease him and to cave into his demands and his whims. The universities like Columbia University has done the same thing. I'm proud of Harvard for standing up to him, but it seems to me that everybody keeps surrendering to him. And the funny thing is, well, except overseas, right? If they would just stand up to him like Iran has done, I think they'll find he will chicken out and run away. And the fact that people in the United States aren't doing that is makes me really wonder what the calculus is. Like,
me too. Me too.
Yeah, what kind of sweet deal is he offering them? What are they thinking? Like, what did Elon Musk think he was going to get out of this? How did Elon Musk not know that they were eventually going to break up? And you know, I thought they were going to make it at least 6 months. They didn't even get to the 6 month mark. That had to be one of the shortest love affairs ever. How did Musk not know that's how it was going to end? Like, does he not know anything about how the world works? Does he not know anything about narcissists? I guess when you're a narcissist, it's hard to know what a narcissist is like. I don't know what the where we are at. So anyway, I think at some point Trump is going to turn on the tech bros, like he turns on everybody. And at that point, at least that part of the love affair will be over.
Well, I had an epiphany or an episiotomy, one of those last night, watching this series that one of my guilty pleasures on TV is Steve Martin and Martin Short's series, Only Murders in the Building. And they do a podcast, of course. But they found out that the New York mob had no longer any influence in New York. It was all oligarchs. The billionaires, the tech bros, are suddenly replacing the power structure that used to be, you know, the Gambino family, you know. And I just found that interesting that, you know, Hollywood, New York has figured out that's where the real evil is going on.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think it's also interesting that we finally figured out we need to start calling that portion of our population the oligarchs, you know, right? Like, at the end of the day, that's what they are. And the fact that we thought the Russians had oligarchs and we had entrepreneurs has always been one of those, like, whoa, this is really weird disconnect. How do you not see that they're the same? They're both doing the same kind of plundering. And yeah, so it's nice that it's caught up. I'm really sad for the Italian mafia, though. As a person who is Italian, and you know, like I wanted to see the mafia be okay.
Are there any of those guys left?
I mean, they still function. They just, they have very little power. The United States went after them in the 70s, and they never really recovered. So Nixon was evil even there.
So I was thinking about how Elon Musk was pretty much all the news all the time for months and months, and now it's as though he has disappeared.
Yeah, it's crazy.
It's like he's completely gone. Yeah.
It must be really messing with his celebrity mindset.
Well, that and finding out that he's not the richest man in the world anymore. I'm sure that...
His ketamine doses...
So there's this other party, like Democrats. I think they're still there, and they seem to want to find some way to oppose Trump, but they don't seem to be able to figure it out. Is there any hope for those guys?
I don't know. I'm always shocked at how incompetent the Democratic Party is. It's like the party that knows how to snatch defeat from the jaws of victory. That should be their motto. And honestly, I feel like I'm enjoying Gavin Newsom's memes where he keeps, you know, imitating one of Trump's memes. I find those amusing.
But Gavin Newsom is supposed to be, I mean, according to some Democrats, he's a really evil character because he said that he didn't think that trans women should play in women's sports. I think that was the main thing that got them upset with him. And apparently he's done some other things. Oh yeah. And he's got a podcast where he has talked to people who are from the right or the alt-right. So I guess he's sort of suspect. So it doesn't seem that he's going to be able to get much traction with the Democrats.
That's interesting. You know, I've always thought it fascinating that people think that the Democratic Party is the party that's going to save them. The Democratic Party is the lesser of two evils. It's still evil. It's just not as evil. I think people have really high standards who tend to vote for the Democrats that can't be matched because the Democratic Party isn't that party. It's the party that is going to perpetuate capitalism. It's going to make sure that white male privilege is more or less intact, even if it's diminished slightly. You're right. It's the party that is trying to keep the status quo. It's not the party that's trying to get rid of class. It's not the party that's trying to create social justice. So I think people need to readjust their expectations. Gavin Newsom is a fantastic Democrat. He's an awful socialist. Right? He's not a member of the Socialist Party. He's never said he was. He's never pretended to be.
Well, the problem is that when you're chasing power and you're trying to take power, power does corrupt. And
absolutely.
And so I don't know how you can have political parties that are clean.
Obama talked about this in his book. He said, yeah, so, I'm an activist, a community organizer, and I jump into the race and I'm going to these parties. And he starts talking about how the parties are changing the way he sees the world because he's talking to these millionaires. And, this one guy's having trouble breeding this stallion he paid umpteen million dollars for, and he's really annoyed. And Obama's listening to the story and he's kind of getting sucked into it. And he talks about how the process of working with people, learning who they are, moves you, it shifts you when you're talking to these money people and their power. I personally have experienced that. Like, I can see how that happens. I'm not running for office, so it doesn't really affect me in a meaningful way. But over the years, I've made friends that have money. Like, I have at least one billionaire friend, and it's true. You get into their dramas a little bit, and you when you discover a person as a human being, you can't help but sympathize and empathize with that person. And it becomes harder to villainize them. And I think empathy, if you have empathy, if you're not a narcissist, once you have that, it doesn't matter what the person's concern is, you will have concern for that person. Everybody sort of experiences suffering, even if they're worth billions of dollars, right? Like, everybody is still a human being, no matter what their circumstances are. And so I don't know how in a political system that's based on campaign financing, you would ever be able to get somebody through who wasn't corrupted at least a little bit.
Well, what do you think about the alleged communist in New York City, Mamdani? That's
I like
been,
him.
yeah, he's very good, very appealing, but Trump keeps calling him a communist. It's like, well, he's a socialist, but yeah, that's kind of what's happened to the term socialism is immediately someone says, well, that's communism. Well, no, not really. It's socialist.
Yeah. I mean, that's why we have two different terms. Yeah, I mean, that's one of the problems with the Cold War and Cold War rhetoric, and then a garbage education system that we have that people don't know the difference. How many times have liberals been called communists and socialists? And it's like, no, liberals clearly aren't socialists.
I lost count of the number of times I was called a communist when I was working at Pacifica in Houston. Of course, that was a very conservative place.
Yeah. You mean Pacifica or Houston?
No, not Pacifica, but Houston definitely.
That's one thing I miss about Houston is Pacifica. That was an awesome station.
It's still around, only severely reduced in function.
I mean,
Yeah, the best
it's
part of Pacifica is on Plutopia News Network now.
yeah. That's for sure.
Well, I've got another question. It's an economic question. And God knows the economic questions are coming hard and fast, but I'm trying to get a handle on w the tariffs. I mean, why Trump is so adamant about having these tariffs, and does he know that he's lying when he says that the other countries have to pay the tariffs and that they're not going to affect us? What is he getting out of this whole tariff scam?
I don't get it, because does he literally not have a single person next to him who's taken economics 101? Like, I like, this is just
Maybe
capitalism.
not.
It's mind-boggling. Somehow he got this in his head that this is gonna work. It will not work, but that's okay. Let's say you there's something you want to buy for $100 and it has a 20% tariff on it. It's now $120. Well, the company that made it is simply going to raise the price, that $20. They're not going to eat the $20. They can't eat the $20 because it cuts into their profit margin. They'll have no choice but to pass the $20 on to the consumer. So it is literally a taxation on the American public,
Yeah, an
on
indirect
consumers.
sales tax.
Yeah, it's an indirect sales tax, and it'll be a regressive one because it'll hit the lower class and the middle class harder than it hit the upper class. So it's
Maybe
a
that's
really
the answer, that he was looking for a way to raise money by taxing the poor instead of the rich.
But then what's the point? Where's our debt? $38 trillion? Like, at this point, who cares? Make it $380 quadrillion. It's unpayable now. So we might as well just burn this thing to the ground. Why would you even bother raising taxes? I think you just completely cut taxes for everybody and add $10 trillion to the debt every year. That seems to be the path that we're on. So I don't know what the point in doing that would be. But it's having an effect. So there are lots of states on the planet that have their currency pegged to the dollar. Those states have lost eight, their currency has lost 8% of its value. So even without the tariffs really even going into full effect, we're already starting to see an inflationary effect in the marketplace. Losing 8% of your buying power is something that you're going to notice, especially since it's only September, right? He's only been in the office for 8 months. It's literally 1% a month. You don't have to be a math genius to realize this ends very badly in a very short period of time. And so, a lot of those currency, a lot of those states are trying to figure out what they're going to do with this situation. Like, how do they compensate for this? And, do they dump the dollar and peg themselves to the euro? That's what I would do. That would be my recommendation, is just dump the dollar and go for the euro. But I think their fear is that the euro isn't going to be that stable either. And so then what? So it's going to be an interesting, 12 years, because Trump will get a third and a fourth term for sure.
You
And
think?
so, oh yeah. Let's do this as a hypothetical. Let's say he runs for a third term. Who's going to stop him?
Well,
The court.
nobody's been able to stop him from doing any of this other shit, so I guess,
Yeah.
yeah,
So
but
who stops him?
yeah, the Supreme Court will, of course, be missing in action.
Yeah, I mean, the court has made how many good decisions? I bet it's about 5% good decisions, 95%. What the hell?
Well, on the economy. Texas has gotten into the whole suck up thing to Trump of having their own Bitcoin exchange and their own gold exchange. You know how he feels about gold.
Yeah.
You've seen the bizarre
Oval Office.
remake of the Oval Office.
Yeah, it doesn't even have to be real gold.
Yeah.
But this gets back to, why isn't he pretending? He's not even pretending. He's like gone full tyrant.
Well, and I wonder
It's
about that. So there are people who were very happy with Trump when he said he was gonna lower prices and, made this or that promise, that he was gonna get rid of the criminals that were coming into the US, but nothing about how he was gonna get rid of hardworking immigrants, and what the impact that might be on the economy. So basically, as a result of all the things he's doing, it's going to get harder and harder for people. He's fucked up health care. He's fucked up the economy. There's bound to be excesses of inflation soon enough. So people are going to be upset. So what can people do? I mean, what can you do when you've got the Congress is completely on board with Trump? The Senate's completely on board with Trump. They may have rigged the midterms so that they'll keep their majorities. The Supreme Court is totally on board with Trump. It seems like we're in kind of a fix here that we can't get out of, even though it could be that Trump's popularity rating drops to like single digits. But at the same time, I think he can stay in office.
Yeah, it's he has figured something out, which is we had a society that was based on mutual agreement. And as soon as a portion of the society said, we no longer agree, all of a sudden the social contract was broken, right? When he said, I will only agree with the election outcome if I win, that was the moment the social contract was broken. when he tried to overthrow the United States government on January 6th, and a portion of the population went, yeah, that was another moment the social contract was broken. Like we're at a point where we have a real problem because the guy has put himself above the law, and there's a portion of the population that's not only okay with it, they're promoting it, like they're pushing him to do this. The solution is simple. It's something we've done in the past. It's called the 1960s. Quebec, Korea, and France still practice the 1960s. And there's been flare-ups like LA, DC, Chicago, but it needs to be sustained. So, during Bush Jr.'s administration, he forced South Korea to start buying US beef. When South Korea, by the way, is the Texas of Asia, right? It's all about barbecue. And so when the South Koreans discovered that they were going to be eating US beef, they began rioting in the streets. And I'm not exaggerating by rioting, like full-on battles with the police. The police are in full riot gear. The South Koreans went into the street with sledgehammers so they could break up the streets so they could have projectiles to throw at the police. They went in with oven mitts so they could grab the tear gas canisters and hurl them back at the police. Eventually, South Korean president tore up the trade agreement and threw it in Bush's face. And he said, I'm more frightened of the South Korean people than I am of the United States. You can eat your own beef. And that's what democracy looks like. In 2011, Quebec decided to charge tuition for college students, something that, of course, we've been doing since 1973. For public school, obviously, private school, we've been doing that for much longer, but for public school. And the people began protesting, the students began protesting. The Quebec government decided, you know what? We're going to make protesting illegal. So the next thing you know, the whole province of Quebec is now protesting, not just the students. And they, at 7 p.m. in Montreal, every day, after people had eaten dinner, right, come home from work, eaten dinner, they would take pots and pans and go into the street and just bang them together. And they did this day after day after day after day. Finally, the Quebec government collapsed. They had to hold emergency elections. They brought in a new government. The first thing it did was it made protest legal again. The second thing it did was it got rid of tuition. And I think if Americans can remember what the 60s was like and the fact that there were serious things done to advance our society, like we at least on paper got rid of segregation, even if segregation still exists. You know what I mean? Like at least we made it so it wasn't there wasn't a legal institution of segregation. If I think that's the only way we save the Republic. Anything short of that, we're going to be. We're going to be Kim Jong-un-ing it.
Well, people are going around a lot that I've heard comparing the rise of the Third Reich and the rise of MAGA. Do you find any validity to that?
So this is definitely 1930s 2.0. We are definitely, as a planet, redoing the 1930s, which is one of the reasons why I hate most of the global leadership. Like really, you dummies decided not to read history, or you did read history and you went, oh, that's a good idea. Either way, you're an idiot. And it drives me bonkers that we're here. Now, there's obviously some leadership that hasn't gone down this path, but they tend to be the leaders of small states. It seems like most of the big states on the planet have gone down this path. So we're there. The difference between MAGA and what was going on in Germany is I think the Germans were a little bit smarter and a little bit more competent. In terms of cruelty and sadism, I think there's a lot, the United States inspired the Nazis, right? I mean, we did genocide first, we did slavery first, we're the guys who came up with eugenics before the Nazis did. They kept quoting Buck v. Bell in their defense at the Nuremberg trials, Buck v. Bell, the Supreme Court ruling. You know what I mean? Like, at the end of the day, when it comes to cruelty, we're the masters of it. But when it comes to competence, I don't see it. And I think that's the silver lining here, is this is more like Mussolini than it is like Hitler. It's there's a very profound buffoonishness to this that the Nazis didn't have. the
I mean, it seems to me
cruelty.
if you're a really smart and competent person, you're unlikely to go all in for this stuff, right?
Well, I would have thought that, but then I saw a bunch of business leaders and tech bros line up like they were at a soup kitchen and they hadn't eaten in months. So I don't know. I think there's cowardice is a really good motivator. People who all they think about is how am I going to make my next $1 billion, that person is going to line up really quickly with the guy that's in power. And that's disappointing because you'd say, well, dude, you have, $30 billion. You can lose a couple billion and you'll be okay. Why not take a stand and throw down? You hear Warren Buffett say something every once in a while, but I feel like he's like this one guy out in a cornfield in Nebraska somewhere shouting. Not many people are listening.
I'm starting to wonder about the future.
Is there a future in futurism?
Well, I'm thinking about how all this is just kind of, I mean, this is rippling through the world. This isn't really just the US where this is happening.
It's
And
not. Actually, there
it's
are
a
countries
symptom
that
of
are
a
ahead of
larger
us.
thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
So the real question, I mean, I guess you already gave the answer. People in the streets.
I'm at the point where I think the only way you stop the decline of the Republic is people are going to have to go on the streets and peacefully protest. I as long as there's no consequence for Trump's actions, there's no reason for him to do anything other than what he's been doing.
And
Right?
they've been having protests since he was elected. I mean, this 50501 thing that organized and started building coalitions and so forth, they're getting people out. I've watched some of the conversations of those people, and some of them don't really even understand what they're doing or talking about or whatever, but they're getting out there. And
What's turnout like?
well, I put a picture up a minute ago that I think was
Yeah, you
DC the
did.
other day. I think they had one of the bigger turnouts in DC, but I can't remember what the number was. It was pretty big. The turnouts have been, I think it's been variable, and I think it's been sort of depending on various factors. For instance, if you have it on a weekend, you can maybe turn more people out because they don't have to go to work that day. At least I think that's been the case here in Austin. But the thing that I'm seeing that I think is good and interesting is that people are turning out in the US in all 50 states. And they're building it that way. And the turnouts have been, I would say, relatively low so far. And in fact, I've heard people say, well, why aren't people doing more? Why aren't they doing more? Well, they're not feeling quite the pain yet, but the pain level is going to increase and people are going to do more.
That'll be interesting to see. I'm a little skeptical. During the period before the Russian Revolution, people would say, if the Tsar only knew, if the Tsar only knew. And I kind of came to the conclusion, I think the Tsar knows, and he actually is the guy ordering the Cossacks out. And I think there's a little bit of that with the American public. If the American public only knew, if the American public only knew, and I think at least 30% of the American public is on board. They've drunk the Kool-Aid. They're
Well,
part of the
but
problem.
when people start going to the grocery store to buy groceries for the week and find out that it costs their whole month's income to buy the groceries, that's going to have an effect. I mean, people are really going to be upset when they can't buy enough food to feed their kids, when they don't have health care for their kids, I mean, health care is going to dry up and blow away now, and it's a pretty significant thing. It's not just that, a few people aren't going to be able to go to the doctor. It's that whole hospitals are going to disappear because they can't survive anymore. There are hospitals that survive only because they get money from Medicaid because they treat, there's some kind of, there's a thing that where they're kind of compensated for providing emergency care, which they're going to continue to provide, right? But they're not going to be able to make ends meet. They're not going to be able to operate the hospitals they're going to like fall apart. So we won't have hospitals. We won't have doctors. There's people, you know, right now there's people who don't want to practice reproductive medicine because it's too dangerous.
Yeah.
You know, because you can't owe your allegiance to the Hippocratic Oath and also obey the laws, right?
Yeah.
Because they're telling you to do things that you know is going to be harmful. Or they're telling you not to do things, then you know that by not doing them, it's going to be harmful.
Yeah, I mean, I the image that pops in my mind is, what if there's an ectopic pregnancy and a doctor goes in there to intervene and he's charged with giving an abortion?
Well, they've already had people who have died because they couldn't get that kind of treatment, you know?
I mean, El Salvador is like this. And Texas has become another El Salvador.
Do you think one of the problems between the 60s as we experience it and now is the availability of communication?
Oh, I'm sorry. Somebody's calling me. I'll just, I'm kidding.
Yeah. Everybody has the ability now of being a broadcaster of sorts.
That's true.
A media star, whether they deserve it or not. And
yeah,
an influencer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, radio used to be fairly conservative, but not anything like if you listen to AM radio these days, it's all right wing talk shows.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's everywhere. And that didn't happen so much. I mean, it was a conservative broadcasting, situation that they had in the 60s, but nothing like it is today.
Well, yeah, you know what that makes me think of is laying in bed in the dark of night, listening to rock and roll from Coma in Oklahoma or some obscure station. And now it's laying in your bed in the dark of night, listening to some right-wing demagogue ranting, you know, over the radio.
Also, the way the algorithms work, once you start going down one path, it keeps feeding you that stuff over and over and over again. And so I think there's the danger of a constant sort of self-reinforcing brainwashing process people get sucked into. There's definitely a lot wrong with our current system. You know, just the fact that I can get so much dopamine off of my phone. Like, my phone is basically a dopamine delivery device. Wow, it's triple D, dopamine delivery device. So just the fact that I am addicted to my phone, just to be clear, I don't want to be like sound like I'm some kind of hypocrite here. The fact that I can avoid doing something meaningful and just get dopamine hits off of my phone, whatever I'm doing, checking messages, playing a game, that I think that has really hindered our ability to get stuff done. And it eats up too much of our time.
I'm reaching for my phone to play my block game.
Nice. I'm going to do the same.
Yeah, it's actually kind of, it's funny, you know, we used to be distracted by watching television, but now we're distracted from watching television by playing games on our phones.
Yes. True.
Exponential levels of distraction.
Let me pause the show so I can finish my game.
Exactly. So I'm wondering if this move to autocracy in the U.S. Is it really related to or resonating with tensions elsewhere in the world or with movements elsewhere in the world? I kind of alluded to that earlier and just kind of wondering what your thoughts on that are.
I mean, there's definitely been this global lurch to the right, right? The whole planet, even Sweden. The Sweden Democrats aren't officially part of the coalition government in Sweden. The Sweden Democrats are the Nazi party for Sweden. But the coalition government can only get legislation passed when they get Sweden Democrats to vote for it, because the coalition government is a right-wing government. So, you know, like, even Sweden now has been contaminated by this lurch to the right. It's unnerving and it's unsettling. Part of the problem, of course, was the left wasn't delivering. The socialist parties in Europe, for example, were, they were stuck in their own little bureaucratic mouse wheel and they weren't going anywhere. And I think a lot of people realized that they were sort of dead ending the Europe in so many ways. Jobs weren't paying as well. There wasn't the kind of innovation that I think Europe was used to. The economy was sort of contracting, and it caused this lurch to the right. I think also when there was a Cold War, there you just took a side, and things were really clear. There was a good and there was a bad, and it didn't matter where you lived. You just picked your side. So like you lived in East Berlin, and you maybe hated the Warsaw Pact, and so you were pro-NATO. And you lived in Frankfurt and you hated NATO, and so you were hoping for the Warsaw Pact. It didn't matter, you picked your side. Now, since the collapse of the Soviet Union and the collapse of the Eastern Bloc, there isn't that kind of polarizing effect. There's nothing to sort of latch on to. The world isn't black and white anymore. And I see people struggling so hard to make it that way. Right, like Putin's a good guy. Well, he invaded Ukraine. That's not good. He was forced to do it. Nobody held a gun to his head and said, "If you don't invade Ukraine, we're going to blow your brains out." You know what I mean? Like there's this weird thing that we have as a species where we want to have a good guy and we want to have a bad guy. And the reality is that most of the world leaders are somewhere in between. And unfortunately, in the last few years, it feels like they're lurching to to lean bad instead of being somewhere in between. And so you can hate US foreign policy and still hate Putin's policies at the same time. It's not contradictory, but because of this need to have this dichotomy, I feel like we got sort of stuck. So if you look at India's Hindutva movement, like what happened with Poland with the Kaczynski brothers and their shift of Poland to the extreme right, what we're seeing in Austria with its shift to the right, these anti-immigrant movements, what Orban has done to Hungary, they do all have a similar, what Putin has done to Russia, what Trump has done to the United States, they do have the similar thread that connects. But at the end of the day, they don't have any loyalty to anybody, not even themselves, not even their own movements. So it has that 1930s kind of nationalistic, everybody's lurching to the right, everybody's looking out for themselves kind of chaos. But at the same time, it is a global movement. And so it's weird. It's a really strange mix.
Yeah. Well, we have reached the end of our hour.
Wow.
And thank you so much for joining us. This was great.
We didn't
No,
even get
thank you
to
for
go
inviting
into religion. We'll have to do that the next time around because that's been a
Oh my
big
God.
influence.
We should totally talk about religion. That never goes badly.
Yeah, politics and religion, they go together like Thanksgiving dinner with family.
Oh man, well, this has been a lot of fun, and now I'm totally scared and worried, and I'm going to go hide under the bed.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, I'm going to go take a nap in the bunker here.
I need
Well,
to build
thanks,
a bunk.
Roy. Thanks for staying
Thanks
up
so much.
late for us.
Oh, you're so welcome. It's great hanging out with you guys.
You can follow the Plutopia News Network at plutopia.io. On Facebook, go to @PlutopiaNews. On Twitter, it's @Plutopia. With John Lepkoski, I'm Scoop Sweeney. This is the Plutopia News Network, 20 minutes into the future.